Listen to WGN Radio's newest podcast, Behind the Badge, Illinois, hosted by David Hochberg. Behind the Badge, Illinois views current events through the eyes of Illinois law enforcement leaders. Tune in. Visit WGNradio.com/behindthebadge.
720 WGN live here in the Allstate Skyline Studios, high atop Chicagoland, and what is a beautiful summer Saturday, and excited to be with you here as Chicago is celebrating in a bunch of different ways with festivals out there, all different kinds of things going on, and we're going to have, and what a great show by Harry and Mark. That was great, right? To take sort of that time machine back to 93. Those were some great times for the White Sox. Great times coming up ahead as well as they put that team together. So cool to look back, and with some great interviews with some of those iconic players. So I really appreciated getting to hear that. We've got an eclectic blend of show for you tonight. We're going to talk a little bit of food. There is so much food going on. We are going to transport you not only from the epicenter of the barbecue world. Windy City Smokeout is going on as we speak, and in a minute or so we're going to have our own Kevin Powell on. We are also, after our first break, going to take you from 355 Expressway and then whatever traffic you may be sitting in, into the feel and flavors of the islands as we talk about Mora Asian Fusion. They've got a luau going on right now, and that is actually very cool. So we're going to talk with Christina Morales, some cool things that they're doing, not only on the restaurant side, but also on the event side as well. So that's going to be something that we are going to look forward to a little bit later. We're going to have Doug Saltis on from Bub City. He's the chef, partner, creator, brain child of Windy City Smokeout. He's going to be joining to preview tomorrow. There is still an opportunity to get out there and experience some of these great people, some of the best pit masters and barbecue personalities from around the country are here, along with some great country music artists. And so that's going to be an exciting thing. We're going to be able to talk with some of them. I got a chance to do a barbecue masterclass. And so I got a chance to sit down, and it was all day. You know, you're kind of going back to school. You're going to want to go ahead and have that intense immersion. I mean, in a sort of a fun kind of festival setting, but got an opportunity. Myron Mixon, you know him as the winningest man in barbecue. You know him from Barbecue Pitmasters. So he was there. He was there kind of giving us the insight into the injection side of things, whether it was pork butts. And then we did some other things with Myron. Amy Mills and Mike Mills from 17th Street. That is, you know, one of the great places, Hall of Famers in the world of barbecue. They got to teach us how to make some baby back ribs. We'll be sharing a lot of that stuff. And then Wayne Miller from Louis Miller's Barbecue in Texas. We got to hear about how to make some of the ribs that they're famous for, and also brisket. So that's some exciting stuff. We're going to have Wayne on with us a little bit later on in the program as well. And then it comes to, you know, what are you going to do on a summer day when it's really hot and let's say it's not that great outside? You're going to get an opportunity to check out some movies. Tom Hush, who is producing for us tonight, is a movie aficionado, so he is going to be kind of sharing some of the things. He saw some movies a little bit earlier today. We are going to have movie critic Matt Cipolla. He is a critic for Film Monthly. He just came back from the Cannes Film Festival, so we're going to have an opportunity to talk with him about not only that iconic festival that we all hear about. Rarely do we ever get to go. Maybe we'll see some pictures, and you have a lot of premieres there, but you think about that in like Sundance and some of those other things. Tom, when you think about those movie kind of events, right? And what they do is they premiere, you know, movies that are going to be there. They kind of showcase them for different studios. I think they raise dollars. I'm not sure exactly what all the purpose is. Certainly, they're able to kind of get a lot of press and buzz for them. You look at Cannes Film Festival, you look at like Sundance, you know, are those the kind of things? Have you ever been to Sundance Film Festival?
Oh, God, I wish. That's a goal. That's a goal for me.
That one seems like doable, right?
Because totally.
You could get in your car, you could take a road trip, you just have to, you know, look for Robert Redford, right? And you get out in the mountains, and then you just hang out, and there's a lot of stuff happening in a mountain town. When you think of Cannes, for the Cannes Film Festival, that's in France, it seems a world away, right? You just think, like, yachts, people wearing a lot of, you know, white clothes, and, I mean, and big stars, right?
Oh, absolutely. I mean, we're talking about legends of the screen all coming together in one little French town.
Well, a future legend of the screen, Matt Cipolla, is going to be on with us a little bit later. And then after that, Almania Narula, she is from Chicago Theater. Now we're going to talk about not only the magazine, the founding of a magazine, and some of the issues related around it, some diversity in the theater scene and some other things, all that and much more. We're going to take a break. And when we come back, we are going to have Christina Morales on from Mora. She's going to transport us, like I said, from wherever we are in Chicago, and still have an opportunity until midnight to get out to the Luau and enjoy what it is that they're doing over there in Bolingbrook. So quick break. We'll be back with that. It's Dane here on 720 WGN. 720 WGN live here in the Allstate Skyline Studio. Overlooking all of Chicagoland, can't see all the way out to Grand and the river, but a guy who's got a bird's eye view of some of the best barbecue and other things happening in, I don't think anywhere else in the country is any better, is our one and only Kevin Powell. Kevin, how is it going live from Windy City Smokeout?
Dan, this is the spot to be. It's basically my paradise. There's barbecue, there's beer, there are women. And I am having the time of my life. I just fixed on some pulled pork, so I'm having a great time.
Well, you know, all of those things that you mentioned, including good times, are there in quantity. So is there anything, I know you haven't been there, there may be an hour or so far. Have you bird-dogged out some of the things you want to do? Because you have only so much stomach real estate to deal with.
Well, I could always make more real estate when it comes to barbecue. I just did a platter of pulled pork. And it was worth the wait. It was delicious. But I've got ribs in mind. I've got brisket in mind. I've got chicken wings in mind. But I like country music to an extent, but I'm not a crazy country guy. But like, this is awesome. This is a place to be. If anybody hasn't been here, I know it's probably short notice now, but if you can get here tomorrow, this is a lot of fun.
Yeah, we're going to be talking with some of those legends that are there on site, some of the people making it happen, and of course some of the other fans that are going to be there tomorrow as well. So not only is there all of that great barbecue, but there's chicken there for sure, and there's also desserts, sprinkles, cupcakes, Bang Bang Pie Shop. There's a lot of desserts as well. Oh, I think we lost them. All right, well, that allows us to lead into something more peaceful, just as delicious, I got to tell you right now, too, as we had the opportunity to check out Mora Asian Fusion, and it was one of those things, we thought it was yesterday as far as the luau was going on, and it turns out that it was today, and this is an exciting thing. My family is actually there on site as we speak, and on the line with us is the person behind all of it, her and her brother Jason. It's Christina Morales. Christina, welcome to WGN.
Hello, thank you for having us.
Well, here's the thing. So you get to go to a place, and you're in Bolingbrook, at least one of the locations. You've got another one in Plainfield as far as the restaurant goes. And it's kind of a departure from a lot of things that you've seen. There's restaurants out there we didn't know. We thought when it said luau was going to be maybe Hawaiian, right? Maybe there'll be some poke and some other things. But you've brought a lot of the traditional flavors, some of the Filipino favorites, and elevated them into a really cool concept.
Yes, thank you. That's what our focus is, to elevate the beauty of Filipino cuisine. And we do the luau because it highlights the Pacific Islander cuisine, which is a medley of Hawaiian, Japanese, and also Filipino fusion.
And so let's talk about the location. So you said you've got one in Plainfield, and that was the original, right, the first one. And it's tough. You know, the restaurant business is one of the most difficult businesses out there. And so what made you decide to try to expand and bring that next one over to Bolingbrook?
So our success in Plainfield was just an unexpected success. Everyone received us really well, and it was a small 30-seat restaurant. And so everyone was saying, go bigger, but we're actually housed in a historical building in Plainfield. It's the oldest government building, so we were not able to expand that location. So we decided to reach out and expand into the Bolingbrook area, which is a sister neighborhood to Plainfield. And it also houses and services the Joliet, Naperville areas as well.
And so then you've got the place in Bolingbrook there. And that is, for those people who have not been there, I'm trying to think of something that reminds me, maybe Lamont has sort of, you know, where they've taken and almost kind of built a downtown kind of communal area with a bunch of different restaurants. You've got a movie theater, you've got parking, you've got a lot of things. It seems like Bolingbrook, they created almost kind of a brand new, I don't want to say artificial, but sort of a kind of a dream downtown, right?
And we wanted to be able to bring a little piece of that Chicago feel into our restaurant. So when you do, we've become a destination restaurant where people who don't want to drive all the way out to the city are able to stop in at Mora and feel that Chicago vibe as well.
Yeah, I mean, there's a Chicago vibe, but also to talk about this, and of course, the you got that Filipino background, and also a lot of the really cool elevated dishes that you have on the menu, and talk about trying to take some of your favorites and kind of build them in to some of these other dishes that people may not be expecting them in.
Yeah, absolutely. We wanted to elevate Filipino cuisine in a platform that people understood and knew, and make it something that is almost in the fine dining streamline, but still a casual atmosphere. So we have a longanisa burger. Longanisa is a traditional Filipino sausage. We were able to make that into burger patties, and it's one of our top sellers. We also have a Brussels and kale salad. And we also have one of our newest dishes is a beef steak, which is a Filipino marinade, and we use fresh calamansi juice that we grow ourselves right on our patio. And we drop that in the marinade, and it's steak and what else? Onion rings. So people yeah. understand that. And I think it's still the traditional flavors, but it's elevated.
Now, what has been some of the feedback? Because, in a place like Bolingbrook, especially in a setting like that, in the Promenade, you're getting people that come in. You know, the restaurant is beautiful, and you've got a great outdoor patio and all those kind of things, where they may be surprised by some of this. Do you have them? And what kind of feedback have you gotten where maybe they try, Ponset for the first time or the Olympia for the first time, and then say, we hadn't tried this before, but now we're fans?
I think it's branding a new way of Asian cuisine, and it's opening up a lot of people's horizons, and that now they are fans of La Lumpia, they're fans of Pancit, they're fans of our adobo pork belly, because they know Asian food to be noodles. They understand it as, pork dishes and with rice. We don't go away from that too far, but we do elevate it so that it is an understood product. And we're using traditional Filipino recipes that actually came from us growing up. A lot of the recipes are home recipes that we formatted to fit the restaurant.
Yeah, you think about it, on the home side stuff, in a lot of the Filipino cuisine is like that, and you look at the success of, let's say, an Uncle Mike's, and I know our buddy Steve Dolinsky was just over there, posted some things. You think of it as sort of this very casual food, and you've brought that elevated elements to it. I think it's really cool. I got to tell, for people to get out there, get out to see you in Bolingbrook, the restaurant is, like you said, it's very, I don't know, how would you describe kind of the ambiance and the decor?
Say it's got a very homey feel in a modern setting. The decor is very minimal. We don't have a lot of things on the table that you would find in a lot of traditional Filipino restaurants, and we want to be able to service you and bring you home through our food.
Well, here's the thing too, is you've got, okay, so Plainfield, and for a lot of people, my mental picture of Plainfield, I know you mentioned there's a lot of boutique restaurants. I see it as, it's farther out, right? And then Bolingbrook is a little closer. I think you have the ability to touch and reach more people, have more people become fans. And the new place that you guys are going to be having very soon is going to be in a place that I think will be perfect. You're going to find an audience wherever you go, of course. But I think this is going to be gangbusters. You guys are actually going to be opening up a place in Oak Park.
Yes, we are going to be opening that up in about a month, and we are going to be housed right in the Arts District, which is similar to the feel that Plainfield has with the boutique restaurants. A lot of family-owned businesses as well, so it supports the background and the backdrop for what we do, and also supports the other businesses that are out there.
Yeah, and the community. I think Oak Park has got, it's got a great Filipino community, and of course you're so much closer to the city, kind of striking distance for so many people who could make that trip out to get a chance to see it. I'm excited for it. So what's the timeline on that?
We are looking to open the second week of August.
Okay.
So that'll be our soft opening, and then our grand opening will follow suit in about a week and a half after.
All right. So right now, because it's crazy town there, where you are right now, not Oak Park. I'm not talking about that. We don't need any text about that. But where you are right now in Bolingbrook, because now not only you have the restaurant there, but now you've got a special event going on as we speak. It'll be going on until midnight tonight. Talk a little bit about all the action that's happening right there with you.
Yeah, absolutely. So it is our one-year anniversary here at the Bolingbrook Promenade for More Asian Kitchen, and we celebrate with a grand luau. So we have the roasted pig. We have a full buffet that speaks to the Filipino, Hawaiian, and we also have the sushi on the Japanese side. And right now we are at about, I believe, at 350 guests have shown up to join us for our birthday and for our luau. We have Hawaiian dancers. We have a DJ. It's going to be a street party. We also have our signature Mai Tai, which has won a best cocktail in 2016 in Boyle County. So we have that for everybody to try and some sake. And it's a lot of fun.
So that's what's going on right now, and people can still, like, if you're on, I mean, it's very accessible. It's right off of 355, so if you're in that area, you can stop out there and enjoy some of the flavors of the islands. And I know that there are some tickets available, and what does it include?
The tickets are $50 for adults, $25 for children 6 to 12. It includes a full buffet, complimentary apple sake. It also includes live performances by Hawaiian dancers, which will be going on all night. We also have a fire dancer coming when it gets dusked out.
Nice.
So if you're definitely in the area, stop by to see that show. And it's just a lot of aloha.
Well, let the listeners know we're talking with Christina Morales. She is one of the driving forces, along with her brother, Jason, for Mora Asian Fusion out there in Bolingbrook at the Promenade. And, of course, Plainfield coming soon to Oak Park as well. And before we let you go, give the listeners all the information as far as the website where they can find out, you know, maybe the menus and some things, kind of plan their trip out, or even social media, too, so people can follow all your adventures.
Absolutely. You can find us on Facebook and Instagram, Mora Asian Fusion and Mora Asian Kitchen. Our website is www.moraasianfusion.com. And you can also follow us, and we do have specials and all of our events. So if you can't stop by tonight, look forward to other events we have. We do sushi classes and such. And you can make reservations through Yelp or OpenTable. And we look forward to having everybody out.
Yeah, congratulations. You know, the restaurant business, without people like you doing it and providing a lot of those experiences, well, we just wouldn't have them, right? And this is a great one. And congratulations on a year again. And good luck coming up for the new place in Oak Park. And hopefully people can get out there and do some hula dancing with you.
Absolutely. Thank you.
All right. Thanks. So that's... Christina, oh, we snipped her. Oh, well, what we're going to do is we're going to take a break. When we take a break, we'll come back, and then we're going to send it to news. And we come back, we're going to have Wayne Miller from Wayne Miller Barbecue talking about all of the kind of the things that the legends can show you when it comes to barbecue. There's a lot of things that we do in the backyard that are great, right? But if you had a couple tips from the masters, you'd be way ahead of the game. So quick break. We'll be back right after this. It's Dane here on 720. 720 WGN. It is Dane here in the Allstate Skyline Studios. Hi. Atop Chicagoland, you feel like you could see everywhere. Again, you can't see all the way out to Grand and the river, but if you could, you would be watching what is a team photo of barbecue greatness. And this guy, our next guest on the line with us, is definitely in that team photo as well. He is Wayne Miller from Louis Mueller's Barbecue out of Texas, a big part of what's going on there at Windy City Smoke Art, and also a big part of the Legends Master Class that I got an opportunity. I was honored to have the opportunity to learn from him today. Wayne, welcome to WGN.
Thank you, Dane. Nice to be here. Thanks for the invitation.
So here's the thing. You're talking with Doug Saltis, and we'll talk to him maybe just a little bit before 8 o'clock to kind of preview some of the stuff that's happening tomorrow. And he set the stage. He's like, the opportunity for people to be able to get you guys, you know, whether it's Myron Nixon, whether it's, you know, Mike Mills, Amy Mills, and you in one situation, one kind of a class situation, is just almost impossible. I mean, what an opportunity.
It really is. And it doesn't end there. I think you look at the vendors that are present represent so many different types of barbecue across different regions of the country. And they're not just representative. They're the top players in those regions. It's pretty amazing.
You think about this. Barbecue is there, and granted, it's been your life multiple generations, and it's what it is. You know, it's what you do, right? You travel around the country not only as an ambassador for your own business, but also barbecue as a whole. And is there anything out there? Is there any other kind of, and I can't think of it, but maybe you've come across something. What is it that's unique about barbecue that not only draws people to dedicate their entire lives, but also, like, fans, right? I mean, you guys are stars.
I think that what it is this deep-seated, inherent code that all living creatures seem to be drawn to fire, and people are no exception. I think that what's really missing is this internal structure of the hearth, this communal aspect of life that maybe religion at one time played in the community, but is no longer the dominant force. So there's a void. And barbecue sort of brings people together. It's a great, it's the great unifier, if you will.
It is.
And I think that's what's missing.
Yeah. I mean, it is one of those things that people, people kind of, you know, celebrate with barbecue, right? If you're at a big party or something, whether it's even someone's wedding, right? Or whether it's certainly a backyard celebration, barbecue is the way that people celebrate, you know, and plus two is on the culture side, you know, all over the place. This is, you know, kind of what people do when they're really excited and happy and you know it's going to be a good time. It's something that kind of universally people really, really enjoy. Here's the thing that I think is interesting about you and about barbecue as well, is it sort of changed. I mean, if you could talk a little bit about that from the generations, you know, years ago, and of course you guys started with the grocery store and have been doing it. And in the most, I think, authentic and less is more kind of way. But now barbecue has gotten, you know, a lot more acclaim, certainly a lot more attention. And even on the fine dining side, I mean, you guys won a James Beer Award.
Craziness, isn't it? I mean, I think when the Beard Foundation overtly made statements such as the only true quintessential American cuisine is barbecue, I think it finally legitimized what we've been doing and what people like us have been doing across the nation for hundreds of years. It's what's fed the masses. It's what's kept communities together. It's what's helped in celebrating worthy and worthwhile events and dates. It's a part of all of our lives. It's an amazing thing to be a part of this golden age of barbecue. It's never been celebrated any higher, I think, than it has in modern history than it is today. There's been a force to eradicate it to a great extent. And now it's making this full frontal comeback in a way that nobody, I don't think anybody could have foreseen.
People talk about the different regions, you know, whether it's, you know, Kansas City, Carolina, Texas, those kind of things. But one of the things you see at a place like Windy City Smokeout is you're bringing in people from all over the country and different styles too. It isn't all one thing, you know, as opposed to, let's say, you know, chefs who, like, their discipline is French cuisine, they may have a lot of things in common, whereas especially even on the educational side and sharing things, I don't think there could be people that are maybe more different than, let's say, a Myron Mixon, the winningest man in barbecue, to someone like yourself who maybe comes at it from a different kind of viewpoint, right, on the education side.
It's true, and it shows the breadth of barbecue too. It takes you from a competitive setting to a retail setting, a backyard setting to a wholesale setting. It's pervasive through the entire fabric of our society, and everybody's participated in it. And so competition barbecue has a place and interest for a whole subgroup of people. There's another whole subgroup of people who just enjoy eating it. And then there's another group who there's a sense of nostalgia that is surrounding it, that it brings about just warm, good, safe feelings of family, of community, of goodwill that, it's sort of addictive. So I think there's different needs that barbecue fills for different people. And there's something out there for everyone. Out here at Windy City Smokeout, you've got people from North Carolina, South Carolina, Tennessee, Texas, Illinois. It's this amalgam of all of these different styles that are all just fabulous in their own way. I just feel honored to be here.
Yeah, I mean, well, and the people that are there, I think 40,000 plus people can't be wrong when it comes to it. And what's interesting too, and to let the listeners know, we're talking with Wayne Miller from Louis Mueller's Barbecue in Texas, is that you, when you're kind of educating, when you're kind of sharing what it is, not only do you give the instruction on how to do it so that you can go ahead and replicate some of these great dishes back at home, and that's great in and of itself, but you're also kind of, I think it's just hardwired into you, whether it's that grocery store style, whether it's the food cost style, whether it's the restauranting style, about, like, you know, hey, this is a better cut of meat, or look for this and don't look for that, or maybe this is a waste, or this is, you know, better on the consumer side. You build that into the way that you're sharing things too on the shopping.
I think it's all about knowing your audience, really. What is it that's going to most impact them and making barbecue a more pleasurable experience for them, whether they're cooking at home, seeking it out in a dining setting, or really wanting to know because they want to maybe be a proprietor of their own. There's a different answer to each and every question. And understanding what your audience is looking for helps you tailor each and every presentation to fit that group. And today it was sort of, you had people who were just enthusiasts and just wanted to know. And so giving them practical information that could help them in choosing a brisket correctly, as well as how to trim it out and utilize it, all of it, getting the highest yield, it seemed to make sense to them today.
Yeah.
In another group, it might not, you know?
Yeah, I'm a total confident brisket guy now. I mean, I can't wait to utilize some of those techniques. Here's the thing. You mentioned the renaissance of barbecue and multi-generations in it, where now you're seeing people, because of maybe the internet, maybe certainly a lot of the food television, people are more aware of what it is that you're doing. You had told me when we were on site there, too, is that, I mean, the interest isn't necessarily just people from, let's say, Chicago making a pilgrimage to Texas to see you, is that there's interest from around the world. I guess you're going to be teaching classes in Sweden.
I have churches of Holy Smoke in Tokyo, in Paris, in New York, in California, and they're spread across this domestic region and internationally on, I think, at least three continents now. And the interest is all the same. And that's the thing that I find probably the most gratifying, is that you can have cultures so diverse and different, yet they all, something resonates about cooking meat with fire. It touches all of their souls, and they all are very interested. It's they can't help but be, there's a gravitational force that pulls them to it, and they're drawn in. And it's the same. It's like watching kids drawn into picture windows or display windows in front of Sears when I was a kid. Everything that's coming out in Christmas is in the window, and you can't help but just be drawn to it and just stare at it. Fire seems to be that way internationally. It's like a human condition to be drawn to fire. And it's, you know?
Yeah, you mentioned it, going back to the caveman days. You know, we've all got some kind of connection with it. So when you are in a place like Sweden, obviously they've sought you out to come there. Do they see barbecue as kind of the quintessential kind of American, truly American cuisine? Or do they say, like, we've got connections too? How do they feel about it?
Well, we all have connections to it. We've just forgotten them, or it's been beaten out of us. You can thank the French. But, you know, cooking in a regulated environment helps us to create better quality food. Unfortunately, it takes you away from a very naturalistic way of cooking food, which requires much more effort and much more time. So, what makes one dish memorable and another not? I don't know. It's individual taste, I guess. But I can say that fire clearly plays an integral part in people's interest in what we do and how we do it. And it doesn't seem to be based, there's no cultural bias in this. It seems to be a human race thing, not just a specific Western culture, Eastern culture, Southern culture. That doesn't seem to play in at all.
Yeah, and you think about this too, is it's one of those things I think we can all remember, or at least so many of us, that kind of aha moment, right, where it's like, I didn't know it could be like this, when we had our first great brisket, great ribs, and it's the kind of thing that you kind of, you know, want to replicate, whether it's in your backyard or great restaurants or on pilgrimages to see you either in Texas or Sweden as well. Before we let you go, Wayne, give maybe social media out or places, websites, where people can get information on the restaurant, how to come see you, and then of course on social media to follow all your action and adventures.
Absolutely. You can look us up on our website at texasbbq.com, or you can follow us on social media. Twitter is Louis Mueller BBQ, same for Instagram, and Facebook, I think it's Louis Mueller Barbecue. It's, we're there somewhere.
All right,
the great.
As much as people are enjoying what it is that you're doing, especially at Windy City Smokeout, you're enjoying Chicago. Before we let you go, last thing, what are you going to do while you're in the city? Are you stuck? I don't want to say stuck. Are you there at Windy City, or are you going to get out and see the city a little bit?
I think we're supposed to go out and have dinner tonight, maybe Italian, because we have more than enough beef, maybe vegetarian. I would go for sushi, personally, but I'm just following along. I will get to see a little bit of the city, the next couple of days. So I'm looking forward to that. I haven't had a chance to do that yet.
He is the leader of the flock at the Cathedral of Smoke, Louisville Barbecue, the one and only Maine, Wayne Miller. Wayne, thanks so much for taking time out. Thanks for jumping on the show tonight.
Jane, thank you so much for the invitation.
Wow, get out there and see him if you can. We have now Camille. Is this Camille? Are you on the line?
Hello.
Hey, Camille. You're in a much quieter place. You're not at Windy City Smoke Up, but you were. And before we go to break, you've got a minute or two to share some of the things that you enjoyed and that people should check out tomorrow.
Oh yeah, of course. So one of my big recommendations is 17th Street Barbecue. I had a chance to talk to Amy and Mike Mills yesterday and try some of their food. And I got to tell you, it was some of the best ribs I'd ever had, hands down.
They're some of the best ribs that anyone has ever had. You know, they've won like tons of world championships and they're, you know, Hall of Famers and everything like that. So to have that opportunity, it's nothing, you know, nothing against, there's a lot of great places around the city and you can get some amazing ribs.
Yeah.
But to have them be able to kind of share what it is that they do, and there's a philosophy. And so was that your favorite thing? Because there's a ton of things to check out.
So those ribs, they were up there, but then also I always have to go to Martin's Barbecue Joint. They're out of Nashville, and they had their chicken wings on the menu this weekend, and people should definitely try those. They are fantastic.
All right. Did you take any pictures we can post at WGNradio.com?
Oh, of course. You can check them out there. Also on my Instagram, at Cammy Cuisine.
All right, cool. Cammy Cuisine. All right, well, thanks, Camille. I appreciate you adding your 2 cents and sharing what it is that you liked out there.
Yeah, of course. Thanks for having me on.
All right, thanks. We are going to take a quick break. When we come back, we're going to have Chef Doug Saltis on with us before we get into the movie thing. Again, if 312-981-7200, your favorite movie of all time that you will watch again and again, or even a movie that you don't necessarily think is your favorite, but you tolerate it again and again. I'm not one of those guys that can watch a bunch of movies again. But, Tom, you watch Jaws all over the... Now, are you looking to see... Because when you first watch Jaws, you don't necessarily notice that it's obviously a robotic shark. And then, like, nowadays you look at it with the way special effects are.
If you ask me, as far as I'm concerned, that is the most real shark I've ever seen.
Because now you look at it now, and back then, for those people that may be old enough to remember, for sure they will agree, and if not, it paralyzed an entire generation. I don't think people were afraid of or even aware of sharks for that most part. I mean,
it changed the game in terms of getting people to be literally terrified of going into the water.
Great. Thank you, Steven Spielberg. But then when you look at the shark now, you look at some of that footage, it looks, you know, the jaw's got like a hinge on it, and it just doesn't seem very realistic.
Well, I won't play my hand now, but later when we talk about this, I have plenty to say about why that crappy mechanical shark basically made the movie better, but we'll save that.
All right, and you can share Sharknado and your thoughts on those sharks as well. We're going to take a break. When we come back, we'll have Chef Doug Saltis on with us. Quick break. It's staying here on 720 WGN. WGN live here in the Allstate Skyline Studios. It is Dane until 9 p.m. today, and hopefully we talked with Chef Doug Saltis from Bubsy. He is in the eye of the storm right now, so he's going to give us a call back when he gets a little bit an opportunity to get into a quiet place, gives us an opportunity to talk a little bit more about some of the movies. 312-981-7200. You can share movies that you can watch again and again. And from our family side of things, you know, I mentioned we've been subjected to a good amount of storks. I'm trying to hopefully get this to load here. And then, Ghostbusters, the new Ghostbusters. We've watched that a lot of times. Thomas, I know you're a movie fan. Whenever you see one of these franchises kind of, reinvigorated with a brand new one, it's a similar stuff, right? It's people in, I think it's New York City. I'm not sure.
Yeah, it's still New York City, still the team. You know.
And they're capturing these ghosts in a funny comedic way. Mm-hmm. What were your thoughts? Did that one stand up? I think we've watched it a lot of times. I don't know if it's the same as the classic, but...
No, and I mean, I feel bad for any actor that has to step into that. You know, even someone as talented as like Kristen Wiig, Melissa McCarthy, who are great comedians. I really think that they're funny, but when you're put up against a name like Ghostbusters, what are you even supposed to do? You've got so many diehard fans that are just going to complain that, yeah, but it's not Bill Murray, it's not, you know, all the rest of the guys. So what are you even supposed to do with that?
you wonder too is like with that, there are so, I mean, one of the things that you get out of watching a movie again and again and again, and it's, you know, we watch some of the Guardians of the Galaxy's movies, and with Ghostbusters specifically, you've got Chris Hemsworth, and there are some very funny lines. And Tom, you'll remember Chris Hemsworth in that movie. He is he's the receptionist, I think, right? He's the secretary receptionist, and he's got a lot of funny, kind of funny.
He's like
lines.
A big dummy and things like that. You know, he was good. It was good to put him in.
Yes, and we actually have Chef Doug Saltis on the line with us now. We hopefully find us. Oh, this is totally quiet. I know you're in the eye of the storm right now, Chef, so appreciate you jumping on and helping preview a little of the action that's going to happen tomorrow. But what a great day today. Doug, are you there?
Hey,
Doug, are you there?
I'm here, dang, you know, trying to find a quiet spot. Got Aaron Lewis finishing up tonight. It's getting a little loud right now. So I apologize for that, but you had a chance to see some of us this morning at all our glory with all the legends.
Oh, my gosh.
And tomorrow we kick off the day very simply like that as well with the best barbecue brunch in all of Chicago. These 18 pitmasters throw down. We got their best meats to start off brunch at 11 a.m. tomorrow in the park.
Yep.
And then we rock way past sundown. Finishing up tomorrow night with a new star, number one song, Kane Brown.
Yep.
So we got a great day in the park tomorrow.
Yeah. Yeah. It's the kind of thing, too, and it's a testament to the stuff that you guys are doing. Completely sold out, I guess, today, right? 40,000-plus people. And then tomorrow, of course, people can get out there, WindyCitySmokeout.com, get your tickets and see it. But this is a great opportunity, and you'll talk about it, too, to see people you would never see in one place.
No, this is the opportunity to get a chance to shake their hands, to meet the people of the best barbecue pitmasters in all of the world. You know, when we talk about barbecue, America really sets the standard for real true pitmasters are. And we're looking to have a collection of 18 of the best there is.
And then think about this, too, is you built in, and this is one thing after spending the day there, is you built in a lot of desserts. You've got Sprinkles Cupcakes, right? You've got, Bang Bang Pie Shop. You've got a lot of desserts there, too.
Well, yeah, Dane, that kind of is like why we like to plan the day. We come in early, like with a Legends class or the brunch, and hang out all day. We have something for everybody, you know, and always want to really support the Chicago people. We have Bang Bang Pie Shop. We have real, real good juice. We have Bud Long. And on top of that, you know, the amazing brisket from Smoke and Lily Q's.
Yeah.
So it's a Chicago thing, and we like to make sure they get a chance to shine.
Yeah, and of course, Bub City, too. Don't sell yourself short. But big thanks. I know that 40,000 people are so excited and thankful that you guys dreamed up this event 5 years ago. And now it is, we talk about the food the whole time, but now it's going to be one of the best country music festivals in the country. Is that right?
So we're nominated for it. And talk about Chicago. You got Brett Eldridge tonight, finishing up the night, who's the Chicago guy, and really just, you know, number one song, blowing it up in Nashville, comes back home, and the crowd can't wait to see him. We got a full park right now. We expect the same type of fun tomorrow night.
Well, we want to thank you for jumping on the air. I know that you've got a lot to do. Even though you're in a festive environment, you've got to be, you know, have your hand on the pulse of so much that's going on. So WindyCitySmokeout.com, you can still get some tickets for tomorrow. And Doug Saltis, thanks so much for taking time out. Thanks for creating this event, and we'll see you tomorrow.
Can't wait to see you, Dane. Take care, guys.
All right, you bet. Wow. You know, it is one of... Now, Tom, are you a fan of country music in any way, shape, or form? You know...
Well, my grandmother's Irish, so there's a lot of love for the country music amongst the Irish community, because country music, I'm going to say it, is basically just Irish folk music, but like a little bit of twang. I'm serious.
And sadder stories or the...
No, just as sad. Okay. I mean, that's how you know you're listening to a country song, you know, or an Irish song. That's the same thing. You lose your house, you lose your wife, you lose your dog, and there you are. You're in the pub.
And there you are. Well, good thing you got, like I said, all the great food there to kind of tide you over while you're here. No, it's a festive time and a lot of fun. Great music acts as well. WindyCitySmokeout.com. Yeah, you got to get the 720 WGN. It is Dane here in the Allstate Skyline studio. And we're talking a little bit about movies in the summertime. It's great to get into a nice air-conditioned place and see some movies. And now, of course, they've got the Dream Lounger. If you haven't been to a movie in the last X amount of years, and I don't know who you would get out there, right? It's totally different. You can just relax. You can just rest, right? You can sleep and do whatever you want. What do you think, Tom? You enjoy the Dream Loungers?
Kind of depends.
Oh,
kind of
really?
Depends on which one I'm in. I've been in some that I'm like, yeah, this is great, love it. And there are some that I just are kind of gross, honestly. They get really sweaty. And you kind of think about, oh, I wonder how many other sweaty people have been in this chair.
Well, okay, so hygiene is important. 312-981-7200. People are calling, texting, and adding their thoughts on their movies that they like that they would love to watch over and over again. I can't necessarily watch movies over and over again. Maybe got a couple of them. One of them from the 630, Daddy's Home. Those movies are funny. I enjoyed those more than and then somebody from the 847 said any Marvel movie that they can watch again and again. Those are popular. I think they do have rewatchable. I don't know if it's built into them. I know that they've been all successful. I think the DC people are probably trying to take some notes on that. A guy on the line with us is going to fill us in on all the movies, whether they are the ones that are in the theater now, plus his trip to the Cannes Film Festival, someplace that people who love movies are just very nice places with maybe yachts nearby, want to make a trip to. It's the one and only Matt Cipolla. He's a critic for Film Monthly. Matt, welcome to WGN.
Hi, thanks for having me.
So that's a pretty cool job. I mean, I guess business card wise, it was a fighter pilot, you know, maybe a gladiator or something like that. But to actually have your kind of thing that you do be something that obviously you're passionate about watching movies. Do you ever? Yeah. And Tom, you work with Dean. Of course, he watches a lot of movies. Some he's less excited to see than others. But Matt, are you always happy to get in there and enjoy the theater?
Oh, totally. Yeah.
Even if it's something, or do you feel obligated to see all movies, or do you just see ones you want? Because I know that you're going to bring up, and we're going to talk about Dwayne Johnson in Skyscraper. I have to mention, we love everything Dwayne Johnson is in. Jumanji was really great. You know, I don't know if we loved him as much in Baywatch. Skyscraper looks exciting. He's kind of like our, like, I don't know, the current, like, big action. He's the Arnold Schwarzenegger, the Bruce Willis of today, right?
Yeah, I would say so. I mean, he's the only real tried and true movie star. It's funny, though. I was looking at the box office numbers for Skyscraper for yesterday, and they're surprisingly underwhelming. I'm wondering if the oversaturation of his market is starting to get to him.
So when you look at Skyscraper, it's got kind of all the things that you'd want in an action movie. You got maybe some terrorists, you've got a building, you've got fire, right? And you take what is, granted, he's a giant, right? Isn't he like 6'5", maybe, you know, he's pushing 300 pounds and he's got giant muscles and all that kind of stuff. But they put him in that sort of, he's just a regular family man role, right? You know, of course, he's ready to take on the enemy. So talk a little bit about Skyscraper, the elements, and what you thought of it.
Yeah, so this is from, I'm blanking on the name, is the director of the movie Central Intelligence, which also starred Dwayne Johnson. He also did Dodgeball. And it is essentially Die Hard and The Towering Inferno, and that's about it. It's essentially Dwayne Johnson plays an ex-Marine who 10 years ago got blown up and lost a leg. He was saved by a surgeon played by Neve Campbell. Now they're married, and he works at security intel, and then terrorists take over a skyscraper, and he has to save everyone. And there's a lot of skyscraper in it. So in that front, it's pretty much what it says it does on the tin. I'm not sure it's anything new. There are but one or two moments where I was like, oh, this is really strong. And they're both scenes that involve really hard edges and mismatched spatial awareness. It's like, it's funny. It's shot by the guy who often works with Paul Thomas Anderson, Robert Elswit. And so he finds some interesting ways to shoot it, and he generally gets better shots than you can tell the director wanted to get, because there's a overly dark look to the movie. Mm-hmm. But it's Dwayne Johnson doing what he does. Surprisingly, they use him a little bit better than I feel like they do in other movies as of late. It was nice to see Neve Campbell back. This is her first theatrical release in Scream 4, 7.5 years ago.
Right.
But it's, I don't know, it takes itself just too seriously to the point where it's not fun. Like, this is a movie that should be, like, dumb out of 10 and just, like, a cheerful wash of ADSD. And it's a movie and it's there. And it's kind of like, I saw this before. You can kind of tell that they know that they're riffing on a bunch of genre cliches, but it's not really by design. It's just that all those cliches are so much within the zeitgeist that it's impossible not to know that they're cliches.
Right.
So it felt kind of lazy, but it's not like I was offended by it. It's just very incredibly mediocre.
Well, great. So I pray. So this would be the thing is, like, unless you've got something else to do, you can kind of take a pass on Skyscraper. But I wanted to talk a little bit about Dwayne Johnson. He has, he's got kind of a good sense of humor. He's in some comedies that seem to do well. And I think, so do people give him a little extra license when he's doing things? I saw in the trailer, he made a jump from one Skyscraper to another, and I haven't gotten the tape measure out, and I'm not sure exactly how far it was, but it didn't seem, even for, you know, an action hero, it didn't seem possible. Do you think because he's Dwayne Johnson that everybody kind of suspends, or do you think that it fell flat where people are like, this could never happen?
I mean, if you're going for realism in these sorts of movies, then you have a lot of mismatched priorities. But there's something endearing about just such an archetypal figure on screen doing something that has more or less been washed away in the last three decades. And it's never necessarily been my thing, but I can totally see the appeal in it. It's kind of scary that he's making like a movie every other day.
Doesn't it?
So, yeah, there's not a ton of variation there. And it's like, I have nothing against him, but it's going to be a little too much.
Okay, so here's the thing, and we brought up in 312-981-7200, people are adding in their thoughts on the movies that they have that they can watch again and again. And someone had texted in any Marvel movie, and you had the latest installment. You know, Ant-Man and the Wasp was out. I know my son with his uncle got an opportunity to go ahead and check out when it was premiering. And he came back with like pretty decent reviews. I didn't have him break down the whole thing, but this is obviously going to be a big hit just because of that Marvel pedigree. But what were your thoughts?
I thought it was okay. I mean, I thought the first Ant-Man was okay. And I think that this one is also okay. I feel like there are a lot of seeds for it to be a better movie. And had they worked on the script a lot more, I feel like it could have been pretty great. It is intentionally a Saturday morning cartoon stretched out to feature length, and that's for better and for worse. I mean, it's light and breezy and cute and fun, and it's a comedy. Like, it's first and foremost, it's a comedy. That doesn't really work for 2 hours, and it doesn't necessarily work when your more charismatic performers are sort of sidelined. Like, Michelle Pfeiffer is in it. She's more or less the plot motivation for the movie. They're trying to find her because she was lost in the quantum realm. Someone's going to diss me for not getting that right. about three decades ago, so they're looking for her. She's not in it a ton. I wish she was in it more. Also, Walton Goggins is in there as like a black market skeevy businessman. I wish she was in that more. There are a lot of fun elements that never quite come to fruition, but there were definitely moments where I was like, oh, that's nice. Okay, this is well done. I don't remember a lot of it, though, and I saw it a couple days ago, so it's not a gleaming recommendation.
Right. Well, I wanted to ask you this, too, and I know when we talk about kind of that whole Marvel universe, is that a lot of these movies, and we're pushing 20 movies here, were kind of planned out, mapped out, sort of a schematic of when they would happen, how they would tie into the other ones from the get-go. Did you see a lot of that, or do you feel like that maybe they're getting towards the edge where they have to kind of look for ways to kind of tie the movies together? Because, you know, with Infinity War, I mean, how do they build that half of everybody kind of dies. I mean, does it seem like it ties in with the rest of the movies pretty well?
Yeah, I mean, it's funny. With Ant-Man and the Wasp, they set it up as being taking place during the events of Infinity War, and Scott Lang was in house arrest. So that's why he wasn't in Infinity War, because he had an ankle bracelet stuck to his foot, and he was taking care of his daughter. So it makes sense, but it's funny. All the schematics of mapping out this entire universe with, I think, the 20th century in the franchise, it very well might be. But at this point, I've kind of, because this is the thing, if you're into it, you're going to get more and more into it. If you're not into it, you're going to get farther and far away from it. And I unfortunately fall into the latter category, because I feel like a lot of it is rehashing it. I do think there are some nice elements that I think it's nice that they're actually trying different things. They're branching into different genres, and they're taking in a lot of different filmmakers. Like Taika Waititi who did Thor Ragnarok. I would have never expected him to do a Marvel movie, but it's more often than not, for me at this point, it's more of an interesting study in blockbuster filmmaking economics than, you know, storytelling or filmmaking as a whole.
Right.
Because it's interesting, because it's like you think about something like Infinity War, and I sat there, and they already announced it, and they pushed the fact that there are going to be several more movies after that. So I knew that what happens in this movie is not going to really matter, and it might matter within the universe of the films themselves, but the thing is, movies don't exist in a vacuum. So I already know that the consequence of anything that happens is drastically undercut. So how am I supposed to take much of this with more than a grain of salt?
Man, we gotta get you. Well, we're gonna find out. There's some movies that you're excited about. We're gonna talk about those. And plus, when we come back from the break, we are gonna talk about your trip to the Cannes Film Festival. This is like a bucket list dream kind of trip for anybody who loves, I guess, travel. Right? It's supposed to be a beautiful place, but they're in the setting where so much of kind of the movie making world kind of turns. And it'll be cool to get your thoughts on that as well. Plus 312-981-7200. We've got Kathy and Matt. Hold on the line. We're gonna be able to share your movies that you like to watch and can tolerate, maybe enjoy watching again and again. Plus 312-981-7200. Add some extra ones in there. We've got some text as well. So quick break. Matt, hold tight. It's Dane here in 720 WGN. 720 WGN is Dane here. Allstate Skyline Studio until 9 p.m. Today we are talking movies, not only movies with Matt Cipolla, critic for Film Monthly. He is kind of breaking down some of the action for the movies that are in the theater now. We're going to hear about his trip to Cannes, which is exciting too. But 312-981-7200, people are texting in and calling with their movies that they can watch again and again. Kathy, welcome to WGN.
Hello, thank you very much. Great topic tonight. My movie is called My Man Godfrey, and it was from the Depression. It was on 1936. It stars William Powell and Carol Lombard, and it's a screwball comedy, meaning it's kind of a ditzy woman played by Carol Lombard who falls in love with a derelict and that turns out to be kind of like a Prince Charming. So I like the story because it has a mistaken identity flavor to it, and then you've got some really great supporting actors and actresses like Alice Brady and this guy with a great voice called Eugene Pallett. And it talks about the forgotten man and the true sense of that word. So it's a great comedy. I even watched it last night. So everybody check it out.
Yeah. Okay. My Man Godfrey. And for the listeners too, where do you find these? Because some of these, you know, they just pop up on cable and you sit down. Oh, it's on and you'll watch it again. Where do you see it?
YouTube. I mean, everything's on YouTube now. It's crazy. And, you're right. Like Turner Classic Movies has a lot of great stuff on there. You can. I don't know why this is so appealing to me, but it is my number one comedy.
All right. Well, thanks, Kathy. Appreciate you jumping in on the show.
Thank you. Bye.
All right. So we've got Matt. Matt, now, this is not Matt Cipolla. I want to let, you know, he's on the line with us as well. But, Matt, like, you've got a movie that you like to watch again, and actually a couple movies from one similar franchise. Share it with the listeners.
Yeah. Hi. By the way, love you, Dana Mike. You're great. So the Halloween 3 and 4 are two movies that I can watch over and over and over again. Here's why. Halloween 3 has absolutely nothing to do with the Michael Myers plot. It was made originally to be an anthology, but when the movie originally tanked, they went back to Michael Myers. It is one of the strangest horror movies you will ever see. It's meant to be like an apocalyptic movie, but at the same time, it's a pod person movie, and there are robots, and it's just really, really strange. And then Halloween 4, I know everybody loves the original Halloween. I do, too. However, Halloween 4 is the best of the sequels so far, although I am excited for this year's Halloween movie. But Halloween 4, it's got great cinematography, great music, and it's just funny to watch. It's hilarious. But Halloween 3, you must watch this. It's called Season of the Witch.
I will check it out.
It's just, it's strangest thing you will ever see.
I will definitely check it. Of course, that's one of the iconic franchises in, you know, all the movies is the Halloween franchise. But you think about watching it again and again, and so much of the success of the of kind of a horror movie is that whole gotcha and all the stuff that you don't know what's going to happen. Then you get scared if you know what's happening. I guess then what you do is you do rely on either all those funny moments or some of the things that you can really appreciate that you're aware of.
Oh, most definitely. Thank you, Dane.
All right,
you guys are great.
Thanks, man. I appreciate it. And then, all right, and so we're back with Matt Cipolla. He is the critic for Film Monthly. Matt, do you have, and I know maybe it's tough to turn off that kind of, you know, the critical eye, right, and be able to watch the movie again and again, but do you have some movies that whenever it's on, if you see it, you'll sit down and you'll catch some?
Yeah, it's funny, though, because I also have a really, I'm also kind of a masochist in that I'll watch movies that are traditionally really hard to sit through a lot just because I really enjoy the craftsmanship, and I like that a movie can pull those strings in me. But in terms of lighter fare, it's just something that I'll watch, especially if I'm sad or bored or something. A lot of Edgar Wright's work, because that's brilliantly layered and wonderfully written, but also it strikes that perfect line of being almost staccato in how jumpy it is. But it's hilarious. It's self-referential. It knows all of its influences, so that would be like Within the Cornetto Trilogy, Shaun of the Dead, Hot Fuzz, The World's End, and then you also did Scott Pilgrim. Those movies are just super fun. And then there are some other ones. I love the Scream movies. It's funny. I remember seeing Scream the first time I saw it was 13, and it was the first movie I saw where I thought, oh, someone wrote this. This is actually a movie that someone sat down, they had ideas, they saw other movies, and they said, this is my take on those movies. Those are hilarious. I like all those movies. 3 is decent. I will stand up for Scream 4. I think all those movies are really fun.
See, but that's it. I think there's certain things that people like about movies, and you mentioned some of them maybe, you know, I don't want to say less about the movie, but maybe, you know, your own personal, whatever you're going through, or maybe that time in your life, right? And you see that movie and it resonates in a certain way. And then for the rest of your life, you're kind of like, it's one of your favorite movies and you'll check it out. Even if those, you know, reasons that you really love it aren't necessarily super straightforward, you know, on the cinematography or the actors or the acting or any of that stuff. Here's the thing is I wanted to, and I know we've got a handful of minutes left so you got an opportunity to go to the Cannes Film Festival. And I think Tom had mentioned maybe you've done it on multiple times, but talk a little bit about that. What is that like? Kind of take the listeners into that area.
Yeah, so this is my first time going. There was this thing that they were doing called 3 Days in Cannes. It was through the festival itself, and I saw a tweet from Eric Cohn of IndieWire, and he tweeted that this was the first time they were doing this initiative, so I sent in a cover letter and a scan of my legal documentation just to prove that I could go, and then the next morning I woke up to an acceptance. So it was attending the festival for the final 3 days of the festival. I was in Cannes proper for about 5 days. So I was able to see 10 movies in 3 days. That was super fun. It was overwhelming at first. I mean, the first day where I was actually attending the festival, it was a lot because I don't speak French. So you kind of have to gamble as to whether or not the person you're approaching is going to be able to understand you and they're going to be able to communicate with them. But once you get past that, you just sort of lose all integrity and self-awareness and just sort of go for what you want. It's a lot of waiting in line. It's a lot of eating bananas and espresso for lunch or whatever you can. It looks like it was built by Disney World. Just because the landscaping is too perfect.
Right.
I have my reservations about the reality of that place as an actual locale. But it's beautiful, and there's so much stuff going on. There's always something to see, because they have 7 or 8 different screens, which are always showing something. If you miss one screening, you can go to the other one. I was able to see, you know, the newest from Spike Lee, Black Klansman, which comes out this August. A movie called Burning, which is a South Korean film, which is amazing, and that was just picked up. That comes out in the U.S. this fall. It was an incredible experience, especially just being able to see all the glamour and all the glitz and all the capelin chat and stuff.
Well, that's what I was going to be wondering too, because it's one thing, you know, you've got the role that you have to, that, you know, the official role, right? You're supposed to watch movies and then come back and, you know, have opinions and all that kind of stuff. But I don't know how you can, you know, the people watching, because, you know, these are the stars of the movies that, you know, that you kind of, you know, appreciated, and the fact that that's how you decided to get into it and, you know, build into all that kind of passion for what happens on the cinema side. So was there anybody that you met where you were like, oh my gosh, there is, you know, or, I mean, I'm sure there's a lot of people there.
I didn't meet anyone. I guess part of it also has to do with the fact that there, I spent a lot of time in, when I was in a line, I was writing a draft of a review on my phone. So that's what I was doing when I was waiting. And then when I was in the theater, I was watching a movie. And then when I was, and then I just sort of, that was the cycle. I was doing that every day for 12 hours. Cause the first movie I went to each day, I think it was at 8:30 in the morning, 8:45. In terms of actually seeing people, it was mostly, you know, watching red carpet events from afar,
yeah,
or being able to people watch. But it was also, there's so much going on, and there is an element of, if I don't get into this movie, my plans are kind of shot for a little bit. So I have to completely call myself over to the other side of the Palais. So it's stressful at first, but then everyone after a screening just goes to the McDonald's that is adjacent to everything. They have a lot of fast food. Oh. Fast food capital of the world.
Wow. See, that's something that people don't know. A little insight for the listeners in there too. And see what you do is you make it approachable, right? So the Cannes Film Festival seems like some kind of an, you know, untouchable, never goable event, and you make it seem real. For the listeners, as we let you go here, Matt, let them know how they can keep up with you, how they can see your work, read your stuff, keep up with your adventures on social media and at Film Monthly.
Yeah, so you can see most of my reviews on filmmonthly.com. You can follow me on Twitter at Cipolla Matt. That's just CIPOLLAMATT. And you can follow me on all sorts of social media, Letterboxd, Instagram, etc. I've been all over the internet, probably too much. So you can stalk me to your heart's content.
All right. Thanks, Matt. I appreciate you sharing your thoughts and bringing a little realism in there, bringing us down a little bit, making us feel, I mean, because we've got to be a little cynical, right? You're sort of jaded, and I think that's important, right? And thanks for jumping on the show tonight.
Thank you for having me.
All right. So this is, we are going to take a quick break. It's Dane here on 720. When we come back, we will send it to news, and then we've got something big coming up. So stay tuned for that. 720 WGN. Honored to have the one and only Amanya Narula. She is with Chicago Theater Now, and this is one of those, you know, for those fans of Saturday Night Special, Amy Guth, and all the wonderful and awesome things that she does. This is something that she had put together. Amanya, thanks so much for joining us here. Welcome to WGN.
Thank you so much for having me.
So this is it. You know, I had always had a dream of someday starting my own magazine, right? I think it's one of those things that a lot of people, you know, have an attachment to. It would be really great to do it. This is an exciting time. You just launched it yesterday,
mm-hmm,
right? And Chicago, the theater scene, I'm not as big of, you know, a theater aficionado as I would like to be.
Mm-hmm.
I know that the theater scene here in Chicago is as good as it has ever been, right?
Mm-hmm.
And getting better all the time. So talk a little bit about Chicago Theater Now, and talk a little bit about starting the magazine, the scene, and kind of what it is that you're doing here.
Definitely. So I am a firm believer that some of the most innovative theater happens in Chicago. I'm a huge fan of Chicago theater, obviously. I'm a theater maker within the industry. You know, I'm an actor, a fight choreographer, director, and now I've been dabbling in journalism. Chicago Theater Now is a publication that I started initially through a prompt from grad school. I'm at the School of the Art Institute of Chicago, and I'm getting my graduate studies in New Arts Journalism. And this concept originally started as a prompt from one of my professors, Dusko Petrovich, who created this class called Publishing as a Creative Practice. And the prompt was literally create a publication and distribute it by the last day of class. Now, there was a lot of things happening within the theater community at the time, and there was a lot of things happening in my mind at the time. I mean, the reason why I joined grad school, I joined this program was because, so I'm a fight choreographer and I'm active within the industry. And I graduated from my undergraduate program in 2016. I was a student at Columbia College Chicago. And that summer, the Chicago Reader released an article about sexual harassment and abuse that was happening in Profiles Theater. As a fight choreographer, that was obviously very triggering. As a woman, as a performer of color, that was very triggering. And I was very inspired by the article and by the tenacity and fight of Chicago theater. I mean, that article was dropped, and then after that, within 2 days, this Equity Theater Company was taken down because people were not ready to stand for that. And that, to me, was amazing. And I, you know, I was always the kind of person who wanted to make a difference through my art, but I was going through a phase where I felt like I wasn't contributing enough. And 2 months after that article was released, I applied for the New Arts Journalism program at the School of the Art Institute of Chicago, and I got in with a scholarship with the hopes of combining my passion for theater and journalism and kind of sort of being able to talk about, like, my opinions regarding it and whatnot. Now, my first semester of my undergraduate program, I was commissioned to chase a lead on sexual harassment in Chicago. This was during the Me Too movement. I ended up catching on to a lead of Brian Posen, who was the artistic director of Stage 773. This was a very awkward investigation for me because he was also a prior faculty member of Columbia College Chicago. Now, I never took his class, but I remember wanting to, and I remember every interaction that I had with Brian Posen was great. You know, he was well-loved in that institution. What I did not know was all of the information that I was getting with the investigations that I had outside of Columbia College Chicago, the reason why he was let go from Second City and whatnot. And my article never got published because people were scared of liability and whatnot, and that's kind of
Well, I mean, let's give a little bit of the context to it. And so obviously that's a conversation starter. You mentioned that this, you know, article came out in the Reader and inspired you to move in one direction, and also kind of, I think, opened up a lot of conversations that led to some changes and some other things, right? And when you think about, and we've all, you know, with the Me Too movement and the Harvey Weinstein thing in different industries, especially based around the entertainment industry, I'm not sure if it's because they just happen to be ones that are maybe more publicized, right? Where we hear about either people on television or in movies that seem to be the people that are involved in this. But in the theater, talk a little bit about that. Is that something that is, I had never heard about in the theater community, that was something that was pervasive or going on or all that? Is it more than a lot of people understand, right?
Yeah, I mean, the Me Too movement was prevalent everywhere, you know, and accountability within Chicago theater is definitely something that is more of a conversation now. You know, after the Profiles article, that sort of unleashed this whole conversation about accountability, about harassment that's been happening for a very long time. And just, like, these different conversations as a whole, you know, about people in power taking advantage of their power for a very long time, and it always being sort of an open secret and no one, you know, ready to take action,
right,
and whatnot. And so that is definitely something that has been prevalent in the community for a very long time, and it's sort of just been, like, accepted. You know, which is obviously it's a very, very toxic thing, and it shouldn't just be accepted.
Of course.
And, you know, I've noticed with a lot of instances that has happened, we're having these conversations on Facebook, which is great, you know, and we hear about an incident and we talk about it and we call that person out, and that's wonderful, but we keep putting a band-aid to the systematic error that has existed for a very long time. And so with Chicago Theater Now, the goal was kind of to not place a band-aid, but the goal was to prevent a controversy from happening in the first place. And the goal is to tackle accountability on all fronts.
So here's the thing. So you've got the magazine. It's beautiful, by the way.
Thank you.
It looks great. It's the kind of thing you can carry with you. So it's got a very unique and distinctive kind of look to it.
Yeah.
And you open it up and, you know, on the journalist side, I mean, as far as like the way that it looks in the pictures, it's black and white.
Mm-hmm.
It's really, really cool looking. So obviously the situation, you know, I think it led to the addressing of a lot of things that needed to be addressed,
yes.
but also it inspired you in some different ways, not only on the academic side, but also on the creative side. And so with Chicago Theater Now, and of course just launched it, right? This is brand new.
Yeah.
I have to assume there's always going to be a place for the, you know, stories of people to kind of share their experiences and things like that. But what other things are you going to do with it? Because it looks like there's a lot of stuff going on in here.
Yeah. So obviously this is the first issue. And so this is going to evolve with every issue as Chicago Theater does. But one of my biggest goals was to show the community in a larger light. Now, you know, as an artist, no artist makes only one kind of art. And so the magazine includes artwork, poetry, crossword puzzles from theater makers of Chicago.
When we come back, we're going to take a break. When we come back, and I want to let the listeners know we're talking with Amanya Narula. She has created a brand new magazine, Chicago Theater Now. And we'll talk a little bit about, because here's the thing on the theater side. When we come back from the break, we're going to hit all this stuff. Is, you know, theater people, a lot of times you know them by the characters that they play. That's the whole thing, right?
Mm-hmm.
You rarely get a little insight into like who they really are,
yeah,
you know,
for sure.
Who they are, the fun stuff that they do, maybe their wants and needs and their passions outside of what it is that people see on stage, and you're capturing some of that in the magazine as well. So stay tuned. We're going to take a quick break. When we come back, there'll be more. It's Dane here on 720 WGN. 720 WGN, it is Dane here in the Allstate Skyline Studio, 303 East Wacker, and in studio with us, continuing our conversation with Amanya Narula. She is the creator, the visionary force behind Chicago Theater Now. And Amanya, welcome back.
Hello.
So when we went to break, we kind of teased the fact that, and it's weird when you think about it. I don't know if everybody's put, you know, thought to it. Is you go to the theater and you see this performance, and typically, you know, depending on unless it's like a one person play talking or one of those kind of, you know, Q&A sessions, they're playing someone else, right? You know, they're playing a character, right? And the better they are at it, the less you remember that it's really them, you know, Larry or Wendy or whoever it is, right? And so this is an opportunity, along with the themes that you're going to have every time that you publish one of these, is that you're also going to take an opportunity to highlight some of the people, right? The personalities in the theater space here in Chicago.
Yeah, for sure. You know, I mean, that was a huge, huge goal of mine with this, was to showcase theater makers in a light that is outside of just their theatrical craft. For example, one of the masterminds of this, so each article has a illustration that goes with it. And my collaborator, my friend, Ted Dayton, who is a wonderful actor, a wonderful playwright, wonderful musician, he's also an illustrator. You know, and I remember he used to be my roommate, and I came home one day and saw him drawing. There was just beautiful pieces, you know, and it was just kind of like a passion of his. And I contacted him for this, and he spent time reading each and every article and kind of used that as an inspiration for an artwork that would represent that article.
So did he do the illustrations in here?
Yes.
Wow.
Yes. But the zine also obviously features like featured art and poetry by other theater makers. For example, Alyssa Thordason, who is an actor, writes wonderful poetry, and you have her poetry featured in here. Tori Johns, another fight choreographer actor, has her paintings in here. Ben Kay, who is a director, created this wonderful crossword puzzles, which is about the playwrights of Chicago of the next season. So it has this interactive element, an educational element to engage the audience who's reading this. And also, I was kind of, you know, I was adamant about including like featured art because some of these articles are very heavy, you know, and they're very personal. And I think it's nice to, you know, have like read an article and then have the next page be like a beautiful artwork, you know, and just take a break away.
Or a crossword puzzle.
Something
interactive. Lose yourself in. Now, here's the thing. this started out from the conversation, right. The listeners remember from a few minutes ago that it was kind of like an assignment, right? You were like tasked with like do this and create this. But you look at it and what you've got in here and the things that you've built into it are greater than the sum of the parts. And have you thought about like where this could, granted it's day one, you know, right? We're just starting here. But I think there's a lot of momentum and you have a lot of talented people not only being featured, but also participating. Is like where this could kind of go, or do you not want to do that yet, right? Just so soon.
That's funny, actually. Regina and Victor, who's Regina is one of the contributors of the Spring 2018 edition, the first edition, and she is the founder of an online publication called Rescripted. It's also another theater publication, and she and I were actually talking today about the future of Chicago Theater Now and the future of Rescripted and what that means. And to me, you know, I would love this to obviously be more content heavy in the future. I want it to be distributed across theater companies all across Chicago. You know, for me, I think the end goal is to have the people in power, the people, the board, the members of the board, the people who are making the decisions, casting decisions, people who are on the administrative side, reading these articles and simmering into it, you know, because I feel like that's when
getting some true insight into maybe something that they hadn't had access to before. Because, I mean, you look at it and it's the kind of thing where and you love those stories, right? When you create something that never existed before, right? Or address something that has been unaddressed, or approach something and see it from a different way and are able to share that, because I don't think there's anything like this out there.
No, not at the moment. I mean, Rescripted is doing a very good job about accountability, but there's something that I think Chicago Theater Now offers the community that a lot of other publications don't, is that this is, and I'm very adamant about this just specifically being a print publication that comes out twice a year. I think that a lot of articles that are online on Facebook, they're great for engaging a conversation, but the instant reply tools that we have with social media can sometimes be harmful because folks aren't allowed to just breathe, read something, have an opinion, maybe disagree, but just think about it for some time, you know, and maybe a director or a casting person or a journalist will read one of the articles and disagree, but the next time they write an article, the next time they direct a show, the next time they cast a show, this opinion, this beautiful, like, personal story that Wardell wrote, that Sammy Grant wrote, that Diego wrote, will ring in their minds, and maybe, just maybe, they might reconsider their decisions.
Well, that perspective will be mixed into the thought process for sure. So it is, you're an actress and you wrote it obviously from that platform. The contributors, the people, performers, artists also too, for the people that aren't necessarily, that are maybe just theater fans, is this something that they can enjoy as well?
Oh, definitely. I think this provides a lot of useful insight into this theatrical world and the potential of expansive growth that the Chicago theater community can have, you know, and I do think that Chicago is one of those cities that is definitely the top of its game, you know, and the fact that people are actually excited about something like accountability within Chicago theater is already a tell sign, you know, that Chicago is definitely doing something right. But when you're doing something right, there's always room to evolve, you know, because that's what we are as human beings is. You know, we evolve. And so the conversations keep changing. And I think this magazine is just to keep the community and fans of the community updated with what conversations are happening right now and what conversations need to be happening right now.
It's really, I mean, because it's one thing for a person to think, it's another for a couple people to talk, but to breathe life into those conversations, like in a greater way. I think if you don't do it, it doesn't happen, right? This doesn't exist. Right. So for those people that want to get it, like talk about where they can get their hands on one. Obviously, I have one here, but for everyone else.
Yeah, so right now it's being distributed at a bunch of theater companies across Chicago. So we have Jackalope Theater, Steep Theater, Victory Gardens Theater, which is the old Biograph Theater. We have the Gift Theater, Trapdoor Theater, Red Twist Theater, and it will be soon at PR Casting and Straw Dog Theater, and obviously we're working on a couple other locations that it can be distributed.
Yeah, and for people that are listening here as well, so Amanya Narula, Chicago Theater now, mm-hmm. let the listeners know, and also maybe places that want to become future distributors or contributors or all of that stuff, supporters in whatever way, how they can get a hold of you, how they can either follow you on social media.
Definitely.
If there's a site for Theater Now, Chicago yeah. Theater Now.
We are on Instagram and on Facebook, and our website, www.chicagotheaternow.com, is going to be launched by the end of this week, so you can check us out over there as well.
And we'll have all this posted at wgnradio.com. And well, thanks so much for coming in. It's exciting stuff, and good luck and continued success.
Thank you so much for having me.
All right, we are going to take a break. We'll come back. We'll send it to news. It's Dane here on 720 WGN. 720 WGN, Dane here until now. And thanks to everybody who listened to the show. Thanks to everybody who participated. Right now, it is straight up 9 o'clock. As soon as the news is over, Dave Hoekstra coming up, so stay tuned for that. Right now, though, the Steve Cochran Show celebrates the most valuable person on the planet weekday mornings at 720 on 720 WGN Chicago. Smart speaker users, just say play WGN Radio on TuneIn.